Welcome to Voices in the Wilderness, conversations about church and leader health. Thank you so much for listening. We encourage you to keep the conversation going. Voices in the Wilderness is brought to you by Preparing for Amazement Ministries, where we empower and equip churches and leaders to create lasting and transformational health. Visit amazed15.org to learn more. We also welcome any comments or suggestions. Simply email us at podcast@amazed15.org. My name is Marcus Carlson, and today our guest is Michael Sullivan. Welcome, Michael. So, Michael, tell us a little bit about yourself, your work, and we deal with a lot of faith leaders and organizations, so maybe share a little bit about your faith background as well.
Well, great to be here, Marcus, and I'm a big fan of your endeavor. And so I am CEO of Sullivan Practice. We're the boutique consulting firm helping hungry tech leaders break down silos, fix crippling mismanagement, and kill death by meeting. I'm a Christian, Catholic Christian. I love the Lord. I love my faith. It's the most important thing in my life. And answering one of Patrick Lencioni's critical questions for teams, we talk about creating strategy. Why do we exist is one of those questions. And mine is to lead people to happiness in time and eternity. And for a long time, I was engaged in campus ministry and youth ministry. Now I bring the blessings of education and the gifts that God has given me. We all have our own gifts given by the Holy Spirit. Now I bring mine to corporate America and largely tech leaders. So I love what I get to do.
Awesome. Yeah, I've learned over the years, and I mean, I say this, you know, a little selfishly, that a lot of our great leaders, both in church and in secular settings, at one time were youth leaders or youth pastors. And some of the best lead pastors I've ever dealt with, you know, were youth leaders. Maybe a shameless self-plug there, but certainly is a common experience for sure.
Yeah, I remember when I was full-time dedicated to that, I thought, oh, those working with adults, they're the ones who really have it down. Until one of my team members said, no, I mean, adults can easily work with adults. It takes a special charism to work with youth. So I thought, felt kind of important after that. So I agree.
Yeah, I think teenagers my heart is with easier than adults, personally.
Yeah, I feel like middle school is easy and fun and exciting and the world is open. And then high school is a little more challenging. And then I really found my niche, I think, working with college kids because they're making big-time life decisions. The biggest decision a high schooler's making is where to go to college, whereas a college kid is like, where am I going with life?
Awesome. Yeah, we've got a college kid and a high school kid right now, so I'm living that with them and their friends. And so kind of in your experience, you know, kind of talking about consulting, kind of shifting gears a little bit, in your experience, like, why do you think it's beneficial for an organization to bring in a consultant? A lot of organizations are afraid to do that, whether that's the expense or letting someone into their system. That's especially true in churches. So what have you learned over the years of the benefit of this?
Yeah, I think it's a great question because there are obstacles that leaders face. Truth be told, in the organizations that I work with now, it's not as much a matter of why would the organization not bring in a consultant, but specifically why would the leader decide for or against a consultant. So it's, and even realizing that has helped me realize who's my audience, because before we are having an engagement with a team, we're not having the engagement with the team. And who makes that decision? The leader. A leader is by definition a decision maker. So I think leaders face three primary biases. Number one, are you going to embarrass me? Like, is this consultant I'm bringing in from the outside going to make me look bad? Because like it or not, everyone knows, number one, most of the folks, not maybe most, but there's always a substantial component of a team that doesn't want the latest consultant to come in and tell us what to do. I've got work to do. And end of the day, everyone knows I brought you guys in. So the egg's going to be on my face if we're doing things that are not helpful. Number two, is this going to be a waste of my time? Like, this is a close second, because the cumulative value of, say, the salaries, the time, the resources of the people in the room is their greatest cost, which is way more than a consulting fee that's offered. And number three, speaking of consulting fees, is it too expensive? And this is the last objection. I think it's oftentimes the ones that we as service providers can wrongly think is the first objection. It is not. It's relevant. It needs to be reasonable given the value that we purport to provide. I think teams as a whole have three more objections. So the objections continue. And I even have more than these, but as team members, number one, I think regarding specifically, well, let me just pause there if you have any comment, because I have further thoughts regarding how that works with the ideas of Patrick Lencioni, a friend of mine, an author, whose work I convey.
Yeah, no, I think that's helpful to like talk about kind of those three big objections, right? You know, the embarrassment, the benefit, the cost. And I think that's a helpful way. I love to think in threes, you know, it's easy. I can remember three things, but also, you know, not the kind of divisive two, but, you know, it's interesting. You talk about Pat and the table group, and obviously that's a place where I've gotten a lot of training, not quite as much training connection as you've built over the years, but, you know, kind of segueing, you know, we talk about the objections, but what are the benefits? And from your experience and what you've learned, what do you see as some of the benefits to organizations bringing somebody outside in as a consultant? And even, you know, specifically, you know, what do you see as the benefits in any setting, but maybe even for religious organizations?
Yeah. And I've thought about this, and to make the question even more difficult or the objection even stronger, let's say there's a team leader or a church leader who's read every single one of Patrick Lencioni's books. And for viewers who may not know, Patrick Lencioni is the founder of the Table Group, and he's authored 13 bestsellers on leadership and teamwork and organizational health with 8 million copies in 30 languages. So let's say there's a pastor, team leader, church leader who's read all those books and can speak to more examples than I could, which is entirely possible, if not probable. Why should that leader of a church community bring in an outside consultant? And I thought about this, and I think number one is just objectivity. I have five reasons. The first would be objectivity. So an outsider can bring in and identify team dynamic blind spots. I, as team leader, can be so close to it that my blind spots or team dynamics that we are so entrenched in are not visible to me. Second, experience. I, like you, work with many organizations, diverse teams, and we can provide proven strategies, best practices, examples. Examples are little stories, and we learn and live on stories. One of my fellow consultants, a great friend of mine, Al, is wonderful at stories, and I'm not. And I feel like he has this ethos in the room of just wonderful examples that he can pull from. Third, customization. So how do I actually adapt all the content and the great works of a great author? Take Jim Collins, take Patrick Lencioni, the author I work for, but we can adapt those theoretical frameworks to a team's unique needs, which is not intuitive. Not all of this is easily just done by reading the pages. Fourth, facilitation. I think like the skill of someone who can read the room and manage the room to lead in focused, engaged discussions that are going a direction. It's hard to do that while being the leader of the team. And the leader could be better at that in an area like you're leading this conversation. And so I will often, as an aside, we will often encourage leaders to not be the ones note-taking during a meeting. Mm-hmm. Have a team member or an administrative support person doing that, since the leader's mind can be free. And finally, I would just say accountability. a great external facilitator can ensure commitment and follow through and be that bad cop and take a hit for the leader when necessary.
I love those. I think those are really, really great reasons, and I think helpful. And I tell people all the time, you know, that when we bring in some outside expertise, what we're paying for is that objectivity of someone outside the system, but can also recognize context and contextualize that, you know, a lot of times when you bring somebody in to help, you're not paying for their time, you're paying for their expertise, right? That, and for me, I kind of go, well, listen, we can skip all these years of mistakes and all of these problems and all of these starting from scratch and use stuff that's been vetted in, you know, in other places. And I'm a voracious reader, you know, I've read thousands of books in my lifetime, and I've read all of Pat's at least once. You know,
Nice.
some I'm revisiting on Audible, and I think there is a difference even for me between reading a book and then kind of taking some of this and applying it. And I experienced that even in doing the Working Genius training, like understanding it, applying it, all of that. But then when you're kind of getting trained to think about this in a different way, it is a little bit different. And I think there's this tension in the consultant world that like organizations recognize that they want to be better and they need to be better. And if they could figure it out, they would have already figured it out, right?
Well
Yet,
put, well put.
right? I tell people that all the time, like if you could figure it out, you would have already figured it out. I use experts all the time in things because even if I could figure it out, the time it's going to take me to figure out and the risk of not having the same level of excellence, I think, you know, those outside voices can be really helpful. But again, there's this fear of, you know, criticism or failure or, you know, kind of expense. But one of the things I'm also learning, I think, right now is this issue of human capital and human development and leadership development and self-knowledge. That's stuff that AI can't do. AI can do a ton of other stuff. Technology can do a ton of stuff. But the people stuff can't be done. And so, yeah, I think that I'm a, and you know, the working genius D is number one for me. Discernment is number one for me. And so being able to read the room and bring a fresh set of ideas alone. And I've had organizations I've consulted with churches where it's like, okay, there were actually no surprises, but at least they knew from somebody on the outside, hey, there's no surprises. And you are, in fact, what you think you are. You are, in fact, relatively healthy. Now, as you transition, here's some things to think about. And so I
Absolutely.
do,
Yeah.
yeah, I do think that's a fascinating dynamic for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on a leader, and to get to be a participant in the room, a leader remains the leader, including of a 2-day executive leadership team offsite. But it's nice to be, the way I consider my role as consultant is my job is to start conversations. Your job as team members is to help the team leader decide. So it's clear roles for the use of everyone's time.
Yeah, I did a working genius consultation with a chemical company, you know, does plastics or adhesives or something like that recently. And one of the things that was really interesting about the end of the conversation when we were kind of reviewing and I was asking them for input was they're like, well, I'm just really interested to see how we use this. And I'm like, yeah, and that's up to you. And that's up to your leader for sure. As you think about consultants, and obviously you and I are both passionate about organizational health. That is the Pat Lencioni influence on us, for sure. And as a ministry, we're focused on church and leader health. This podcast is conversations about church and leader health. Obviously, you know,
Yeah.
both of us in our secular work doing health with organizations and teams. When you think about like a consultant, what role can they play in the health of an organization and in general, but again, specifically as you think about churches, what role can a consultant play in the health of an organization or a church?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And so to move on from why would someone not bring in, and part of the answer we've talked about to overcome those biases against bringing in a consultant, I would say it's a trusted guide, a trusted advisor to lead an organization, including a non-for-profit, including a church organization, to organizational health. Because as I see it, as a Christian philosopher, so to speak, God gets the copyright not only on grace, but also on nature. He has the trademark not only on reason, faith, but also on reason. And so what is natural, not only supernatural, God gets the credit for. And so what an organizational health consultant, coach can bring to an organization, including a religious one, is leading that organization through what we would call the four disciplines of organizational health. But to step back one step, I would say, why even try? So our contention, the contention of Patrick Lencioni, organizational health, would be 9 out of 10 organizations are very focused on being smart, and they absolutely should be. What does it mean to be smart? It means we have rock solid marketing and sales and finance and operations and technology and all of the decision sciences that are core competencies and cannot lack. And it's wonderful that there's a focus on that. Our contention is that there's more to the picture, that there are two elements, not just one, necessary for success. And the whole other column, the other untapped, we call it the last remaining competitive advantage, is what we would call being healthy, not just smart. And so it's tough to define health, but like, what would something be if it were healthy? So maybe go to an example, not a definition. Something healthy, an organization, a team, a family that's healthy, wherever two or more are gathered, will be healthy if, number one, there's low politics. And by low politics, we mean people trust each other, willing
Yeah,
to
there's
be
no games
vulnerable.
to get what you want. We're not talking about governmental politics, but the gamesmanship, right?
Sadly, politics has gotten a bad name. I mean, Aristotle back in the day, by politics meant wherever two people have one goal, we have a political polis from the Greek, a common endeavor. But the connotation around politics is number the five bad connotations would be, number one, there's mistrust, there's misattribution of error. I'm judging your intentions, not out of malice, but I just don't know you, and the brain's got to fill the gap. Second, a way politics can happen is by fear of conflict. And this is particularly true, I think our conversation will go here, regarding religious groups, where we can look at any conflict or any debate as kind of a sin against niceness. The third way a group can be political is lack of commitment, just being ambiguous about, wait, what do we end this meeting deciding to do, say, and not say? Around which, fourth, there can be very little accountability, because if a commitment hasn't been clear, how can peer-to-peer calling one to account happen? And if that's not happening, finally, the height of dysfunction, the height of politics, would be that we operate in silos. And we may speak the language of team, but we operate really rewarding individuals. The height and the summit of dysfunction is silos, non-collaborative effort. So that's the first problem. That's a mouthful. But a first problem with non-healthy teams. So healthy teams are not political. They overcome the five dysfunctions of a team. The second thing the greatest teams do is they have low confusion. So they have aligned around what is priority for us. They've answered questions regarding how are we critically clear on our strategy, our purpose, our core values, our success filters, our roles and responsibilities, our top term priority. All these things we've garnered or master, or in the process of mastering behaviors that make us the kind of people that can have this great decision-making capacity. And then those are the two biggies. So the three other things that organizations have that are not healthy, or that are healthy rather, is number one, they have just high morale, high productivity, and low turnover. So not of all of our key players, but not of all of our employees, but of our key players, can we please not lose our best people? So Our contention is that the healthiest organizations that tap into the healthy side, number one, it's a gain in its own right. Number two, here's the kicker, Marcus. We do not see in teams that are innately smart anything in that smart that will lead them to be healthy. But the converse is true. If a team is healthy, they will actually untap hitherto untapped smarts going on. Because if we're the best at sales and finance and marketing and operations and the decision sciences on the smart side, but we can't have difficult conversations and get over the fact that I just don't get along with you, Marcus, then all of that awesomeness on our super smart side remains untapped. So not only is tapping into these healthy things and doing the work on the qualitative teamwork side a benefit in and of itself, but it multiplies the smarts, making it what we call the last remaining competitive advantage.
Yeah, and healthy is greater than smart, right? Like that's part of the mantra. It is more significant. And you said a lot of really interesting things there. Certainly one of the things that I find myself saying a lot in any institution, but certainly in churches, is any organization could get healthier, right? Any person, any leader can get healthier. And so it doesn't matter if you're a nine on the scale of, health. Like how can you move in the direction of greater health? And that idea that we need to be nice, we need to be kind. And I think this nice Christianity where we never have conflict, we never upset
That's
anyone, we
funny.
never
I like
challenge anyone.
that.
Right. We talk about this all the time because, in the church, certainly we'd rather talk about somebody than to someone. And we
Well
actually
put.
convince ourselves that that's like right and biblical and healthy when Jesus says pretty much the exact opposite in Matthew 18, which we push and talk about a lot. And again, for me, if somebody cares about me, they're gonna tell me, right? They're not gonna ignore it. And so I think that that is certainly kind of in churches is a huge deal. And the other thing that really struck a chord with me that you said was, I'm working with one of the organizations I've been working with. We actually made a lot of changes to the culture. And what we're seeing is that the staff with the same amount of hours are getting far more done and are happier. And what changed was not job descriptions or, distractions or their intelligence or their skill level. The organization got healthier. Right, the culture got healthier. And so I think, especially in this market where it's an employee market and finding, getting, retaining good people is really hard, this issue of health is so critical. There's, again, with technology and just with industry, right? There's a million churches to choose from. There's a million consultants to choose from. There's, I mean, I live in a small town and there's three places you can get your coffee, right? And so not including your house. And so there is this obviously this super competitive market. And so I think this is where obviously, and in the church we're not set to compete, but in the church we ought to be trying to be the healthiest organization we can be, because if we're unhealthy, what is that doing to the people that we're trying to help look more like Jesus?
Right. And I'm often want to ask a leadership team, who are your competitors? And when I work with churches or leadership organizations within churches, I'll ask that question, and it'll make everyone think, right? And the fact is that the competition for churches is just arguably secularism, people not going to church at all. It's not another church. It's the fact that who's even going anywhere? And why would these healthy principles not apply to us doing the work of God? Should we not be better at all the things that he and his wisdom created in nature, untainted? On the seventh day, he looked at everything he made and it was very good. And all these principles of human interaction and relationship and communication and conflict resolution, God gets the trademark on all that. So in so doing, we're honoring him, even if implicitly.
Yeah, I think about that all the time, right? That, Christ does not demand perfection. It's not possible. But excellence, I think, is part of the call. And we were, as a family, we were traveling recently abroad and saw all this beautiful art and architecture in churches. And my daughter's like, this is amazing. And I said, well, yeah, back in that day, the Christians, the followers of Jesus, were the best artists. Right. And now what we would call Christian art, whether buildings or music or paintings or whatever else, is some of the least quality and is oftentimes not even theologically sound. And so shouldn't we pursue excellence as followers of Jesus even more so, showing ourselves some grace when we don't get there? And I think that's true with organizations. And in my experience, an outside set of eyes, an outside set of ears can really help in a church see where, you know, where there's opportunity for greater excellence, greater effectiveness, greater achievement of mission. And we just don't know the culture that we swim in, the things that we see as normal, that I'll often hear, oh, that's just how so-and-so behaves. Well, okay, maybe, but like, it's not okay. And, you know, it's the story of the two fish in the oceans. You know, one of the fish looks at the other and says, how's the water today? And the second fish responds, what's water? Right? That we have the sense of, like, we don't realize the culture in which we swim, especially, I think, in our organizations.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that I like a word you used, which is nicedianity.
Yeah. Yeah, I make conflict up these is just random honest words, you know.
I'm liking it. We you have German background. You can just put a hyphen anywhere, and now you got a couple words or one word.
Sure. Well, you know, as a theologian, it's like, oh, well, he's a pastor and a theologian, so it must be a real thing, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
And I think that my own little homegrown definition of conflict is honesty out loud. You can have good people with good goals and good ways to get there. And they're all different. And that's truly enriching diversity, like, because it's ideological diversity. If you and me disagree on what's the best way to get to a goal, tactics, or what's a better goal in the first place to even aim at, strategy, now we've got an enriching conversation. And a good team leader wants to foster that. And although a good team leader's role as a cohesive creator of culture is to go first by way of modeling vulnerability, it's to go last when it comes to step two of health, which is to demand debate and to pose the question, but realize, if I could decide on my own in solitude, why would we even have a team? But since we're here gathered in the common endeavor of being non-siloed and to be collective and excellence, I'm going to ask the question and withhold what I think to allow debate to circle before I then go into step three as leader and say, yes, I will now force clarity and closure. Sometimes we use these strong words like be vulnerable. What does that even mean? Or demand debate and force closure. Well, yes, because it's not a democracy. Great companies and great churches are not run like great countries. They're not a democracy. No.
And the U.S. is not technically a democracy. I remind people it's a constitutional republic, right? And one of the things Pat says all the time is you want ideological conflict. And I think that's been an interesting experience in churches to model, like, hey, you don't want interpersonal conflict. It happens. You got to resolve it. But you do want ideological conflict. And so I think in churches, it's either complete all-out brawl arguments or groupthink,
right?
You know, and so I've even seen that in recent meetings where I found myself, the phrase that Pat uses is mining for conflict, right? And just like, okay, somebody says something that's not actually true, and I don't have to say it because it doesn't matter, but I'm going to say it so that we can have an ideological argument. And say, no, you're actually wrong about that, I think. And here's why. And you know, and people in the room will look at you like, oh my goodness, we're fighting in the church. And it's like nobody's voices are raised, nobody's insulting each other. You know, it's just we have this idea. But almost every great thing I've learned, every transformative thing has come in some way or another in conflict. Sometimes with myself, but you know, conflict is a great teacher for sure.
No, I love that you say that because I guess someone could raise an objection and say, well, why do we need that? And another way of asking that is, well, what do we have in the absence of that? We have groupthink. And you mentioned the working genius earlier and how one of your geniuses, one of your areas of strength, growth, and fulfillment and joy is discernment. Well, that's pretty squarely in the innovation category. And without conflict, we're just doing the same thing. It was famously Einstein who said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Yeah, I don't know who
And
said it,
so, in the
but
absence,
it's accepted definition for sure.
yeah. And in the absence of that, we're just repeating ourselves. And so it takes a good deal of our own security. And you mentioned mining for conflict, which is far more common. Why? Because among teams, and here we, to put this in context, as you and I both know, we're squarely in that first discipline of organizational health, which is to form a cohesive leadership team. And the second rung of that after trust is conflict. And so within conflict, there can, like anything, be too little or too much. Here's the thing, too little is far more common than too much. I've heard many folks ask me, you're in the room with the CEO or the C-suite of some enterprise organization, tell us what those battles are like. And I'll say, blood on the walls, no holds barred, doesn't really happen save in Law and Order or Yellowstone. The fact is, most of us are on the kiddie end of the pool, the shallow end of false harmony, where it's way easier to manage impressions than go gutsy and admit, I have a new idea. I'm going to challenge the status quo. I'm going to admit my own mistakes. I'm going to ask a dumb question. Those are all either, seriously or moderately conflictive. But that's where great ideas come from. And that's why trust needs to undergird conflict, because once I've separated the people from the problem, conflict becomes literally the search for truth, not politics, because it's about what's right, not who's right.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge cultural issue. This has been a great conversation about, again, getting an outside set of eyes and expertise for organizations, for churches. Any other closing thoughts as you're talking to ministry leaders about the value of having somebody come alongside you?
I thought of something that we said at the very beginning of our conversation, which is why bring in a consultant at all? And a fair follow-up to that question might be, when does this end? Are you just, as a consultant or a consulting firm, trying to embed yourself in our organization, never to leave, to make us eternally dependent upon you? And the answer is no, because give a man a fish, you teach him, you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And I'm a firm believer in that, and that there are so many hungry, needy leaders out there of churches and others who need our help. The metaphor that a great friend of mine, a fellow consultant, said is just look at Tom Brady. Or if you're not a Tom Brady fan, insert here your favorite football player slash quarterback. I'm quite certain that after 20 years in the NFL, and he ended up at the Bucks, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Tom Brady had every coach on the Buccaneers, every foot quarterback coach on the Buccaneers honed and trained on helping him improve. Number two, that he had personal private coaches helping him additionally hone his skill. He could have easily sat back on his laurels and said, I am the GOAT. I am the greatest of all time. I need no coach. But he didn't say that. He said, I want to continue my growth in excellence. So the answer to how long and to what degree do you want to bring in an external expert really boils down to, well, let me answer that by asking you this, how great do you want to be? I have my own coaches, my own therapist, my own spiritual director, and it's all about what one's personal goals are.
Awesome. Michael, thanks so much for making the time today. It's been great to have you with us, and I think we'll try to do this again and dive into some other fun principles, but really appreciate your perspective and the things that you've taught me here today and along the way before this.
Likewise, Marcus. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. We encourage you to keep the conversation going. Voices in the Wilderness is brought to you by Preparing for Amazement Ministries, where we empower and equip churches to create lasting and transformational health. Visit amazed15.org to learn more. We welcome any comments or suggestions for podcast topics or guests. Simply email us at podcast@amazed15.org.